Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, back from the United Kingdom, what some might call the green and pleasant country, but apparently is also nicknamed Old Blighty, which is news to the people over there. But anyway, I was hanging out with the staff of Eurogamer, but I am now officially back. And joining me today is Bob Mackey, who does not travel.
I'm not allowed to leave the country.
I don't mean to rub salt in your wounds. No. It's just funny that we're jetting around the country and you're stuck back here.
I just got a passport. I can't tell anyone where I'm going, but it'll be a big, fun surprise.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You're ready to, explore the wonders beyond our borders.
I'm ready to finally get out of this crazy country we call America.
Speaking of wonders beyond our borders, we're going to be talking about quite a few games today, including Japanese RPGs, which is very exciting. But we're going to start with Undertale, which Bob just reviewed, and I've played a bit of. I don't think I've gotten out of the tutorial dungeon, but it's interesting game. Do you want to kind of summarize it for us?
Sure. The problem is, and if you read my review, I go over this a few times, the problem with talking about Undertale is giving away specifics will ruin it for a lot of people, because it's a game very much built around surprising you. But essentially, it is a send-up of Japanese RPGs, but it essentially uses the tropes of those RPGs and the mechanics and the systems in order to build a certain kind of familiarity with those ideas, and then it immediately will subvert them at every opportunity. That's what it does the best. So that's basically my elevator pitch for Undertale. It is a game that uses the JRPG mechanics in order to subvert them and play with them in many different strange and fantastic ways.
So when you first start out, kind of the only things that you can do are attack and then also converse with the monsters that you encounter, which is one of the more amusing things that you can do. Do the systems ever get more advanced than that?
Well, I mean, it's always that fundamental choice between deciding to go for a hostile or a non-hostile attack. But as you go through the game, the sort of dialogue puzzles that will give you the non-hostile solution get more and more complicated and more interesting. I'm normally a non-hostile player when I have that choice, but in this case, I really wanted to go for that choice because the battles are much more interesting when you are trying to go through the options and figuring out what order you need to put them in or what order you need to go in to get that non-hostile resolution to the conflict, to the combat.
And it's the non-hostile resolutions that are usually, or at least in the early going, one of the funnier things that you can end up with.
Yeah, this is a very funny game. And that's another reason, because you're just getting more jokes, more funny animations, more interesting ideas if you're doing this non-hostile stuff. And with every enemy you encounter, there are different options to choose from. Every enemy has their own unique options. It's kind of like dealing with demons in the older Persona games, except there's more sense to it. You're not just picking random answers and then being surprised when you're not telling the thing it wants to hear.
Yeah. Negotiating with demons in Persona has always been the worst, because it's just basically randomized responses, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they're, I don't know if they're randomized. They're they're always connected to something, but it's just I like baseball. How about you? And you say, I know. And I hate you. I'll kill you. Or that's basically how the demon conversations go. You have no idea. There's no context provided. But in this one, the enemies will talk. Some enemies will just be really wimpy and be don't hurt me. And then one of the options will be don't pick on this enemy. And then they'll appreciate that. And then you can spare them. Sometimes it's just that simple. But other times, I'm just going to give away the examples I gave away in my review, because again, these are all puzzles and I don't want to give away puzzle solutions. But in one case, one of the enemies is this flirty bodybuilder who, instead of attacking him, you just basically keep choosing the flex command until he flexes himself out of the frame and you win the battle. Like, but and every time you choose that flex command, you have to dodge a bunch of biceps as they're rolling up through the top, through the bottom of the screen. Because, like I said in the review, there's that really super interesting WarioWare style battle mechanic where every time you're dealing with enemy attacks, you are locked into this really tiny, really like 5 second long micro game where you either have to dodge projectiles, collect certain things, shoot certain things. It's always so imaginative, and just the amount of ways they're able to play with this basic idea, they just keep doing new things from the beginning of the game until the end.
Oh, okay. So it goes beyond the kind of dodge the bullets thing that they have early on.
Yeah, the majority of them, I'd say most of them are sort of those bullet hell things, but there's some times where you don't have to move your little avatar, sometimes where you have to move it in a certain way. Other times, I can't give away anything, but other times the entire menu system changes. The box grows bigger, different things happen. It is always doing new things that you never assumed it would ever do with this very seemingly simple setup.
So this is kind of a game that you just want to roll along with.
Yeah, and I do see people being disappointed that it's not as traditional an RPG as they want it to be, but I would say it's barely an RPG, and like I said, it uses those familiar mechanics in order to lull you into a sense of complacency so it can just mess with you at every opportunity. It's very much like WarioWare in that it's all about subverting expectations and screwing with you at every turn, and that is why I like the game. I mean, I think if you're looking to get into it to like build a character and develop skills and try on weapons and armor, this is not going to be the game for you. It's more about just like being very playful with this really entrenched idea of the Japanese turn-based RPG, even though it's not made by anyone Japanese. It's made by Toby Fox, and I believe he's American, or she. I'm not sure even the gender of the person who made the game, but I know they're not Japanese.
I was going to say that even though it looks kind of like Dragon Quest, I guess, first-person perspective when you're fighting enemies, that sort of thing, it feels more like an adventure game, just in the sense that you're spending a lot of time solving puzzles, lots of traversal puzzles, at least early on. And the actual systems are practically non-existent. So a lot of the game's, charm, it seems, is dependent on just on the writing and all the weird things that are happening, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially since some of the most beloved JRPGs out there had some pretty minimal systems themselves. I look no further than Final Fantasy IV, which we've brought up on this show a few times. Great game, pretty minimalist in terms of systems. A lot of its appeal is based on the story, so. But you know what? If you go back to the original Dungeons and Dragons, there are plenty of people who don't really give a damn about min-maxing their character. They just want to experience a story. So, oh, yeah. There you go, right?
Right. I mean, like, there are only two stats in this game, I think, just attack and defense, and you don't gain any skills or any special attacks or any magic. You're just always fighting or doing the nonviolent conversation options. Or they're not always conversations. Sometimes they're actions, like, you know, you pet the dog enemy, or you, like I said, you flex for the bodybuilder enemy. But I was not really looking at it as an RPG, even though it uses those mechanics. Like you said, it's more of an adventure, puzzle, dialogue game. It's really hard to classify exactly what Undertale is, because it just pulls from all of these different genres, but it takes the form of an RPG, I guess. That's what it is on the surface.
I've finally sided with Jeremy. It's a waste of time to classify things anymore.
I know. It just, I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's irrelevant what you label something as. It's just a way for us to categorize things. And sometimes that's helpful, but when it gets down to, like, why are we even arguing about this, that's when it's not helpful.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where, if this year has taught me anything, it's just looking at the breadth and range of games coming out, and so many games just keep coming out that completely defy genre conventions and use, you know, tropes or design elements from a whole mess of things to kind of create their own thing. It's just like, why am I going out of my way to put this in a particular bucket? Whatever, I'm just going to roll with it. In the case of Undertale, superficially, yeah, it resembles an RPG, but it definitely has a very different flavor to it. Regardless, even though it doesn't have mechanics or systems per se, I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting game, and I'm always happy to see a game that kind of relies on its wit, because frankly, we don't get that nearly enough.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, this is a game where something will happen and you'll be like, I can't believe they did that. And then they will just double down on that idea and turn the game into something completely different. And you're like, one person made this game. They had to sit down and think about how to turn this RPG into something completely different just for the sake of one joke. And it's always worthwhile, and it's always just like, you want to play just to see what happens around the next corner. And like, this may make it sound like a very gimmicky game, but the boss battles and the special enemy encounters in this game are actually very difficult and very interesting, and have like go through all these phases, require a lot of like split second timing and smart decisions. So even if that those RPG mechanics aren't fully fleshed out, there's still a lot to dig into in terms of like what the combat is like.
When you say that these battles are very difficult, do you mean in the sense of, you know, doing the mini games properly, and then being able to work out like what you should be doing to these things, like in terms of conversation choices and that kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the first few turns with any enemy is you're just always like figuring out like what do I do now? And if you screw up, you always have to sit through one of their turns, which involves you getting damaged in some way. You can avoid it, but like some of the attacks are pretty hard. It can get kind of bullet hell-y, like a bullet hell shooter sometimes. But yeah, I mean, like, it really is just figuring out what the enemies want from you and then moving on from there. And luckily, this game is so smart in that once you fight the same enemy a few times, you never see them again. So you don't just have to go through the motions of like, okay, now I gotta do this, now I gotta do that, now I've gotta wait for their turn to end. Once you see an enemy a few times, that's it. That's all you'll ever see of them. And they move on to the next enemy to show you some new weird thing or some new weird idea.
How long is this game?
It's actually pretty long. I'd say it's between 6 to 8 hours, and there are also different paths you can take. And people are still trying to figure out, or maybe they have, I have not looked into spoilers, but there's like a true ending that you need to do special things to get, but there's like there's a hostile path and a non-hostile path, and maybe some wiggle room between them. But again, this game does some very inventive stuff with everything, including your choices to be either like a murderer or a peaceful person. And as you like travel through this land of monsters and learn about who the monsters are and why they're there, you begin to feel compassion for even the really mean ones. And you're like, I shouldn't actually kill these things. But I am planning on doing a hostile playthrough just to see what will happen in the game, because everything is so goofy and everything is so feel good and like, I don't know, heartwarming, that it's very hard to want to kill anything, but I just want to see what happens when I do.
Yeah, this is a game that drops you in with very little context. It's just all of a sudden you're in a maze, or you talk to a thing, you get introduced to the mechanics a tiny bit, and then you're kind of being guided through what seems like a maze by a friendly goat? Llama?
Goat lady? I don't know what she...
Goat lady?
Yeah.
And she's like helping you out with puzzles and everything and kind of being nice and teaching you the mechanics, and then she goes away and you're like, oh, okay. And then you keep going, and then the first time you have like a real battle, just the fact that you can end it peacefully made me go, there must be some kind of penalty. I don't know what it is, but there must be some kind of penalty for killing these monsters. Like, it makes me think of Nier, where it's like with the shock twist at the end of Nier. So I immediately just went, well, I'm going to be nice to these monsters and it's going to be good. So, but there were points where like, I guess my health was kind of low, or I was having a hard time dodging all of the bullets or whatever. So I was just like, screw it, you're dead. And then I always felt bad when I did actually kill them, because I was like, it's like Metal Gear Solid, right? Where
it definitely is the much easier option, because you always have the fight option. There's nothing to figure out. You just stop a meter and then, you know, attack the enemy that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it's like Metal Gear Solid, where whenever I was forced to kill an enemy, I always immediately felt horrible.
Speaking of Metal Gear, there are things in this game...
Oh my god, Metal Gear.
There are things in this game, which is not an RPG, I'm pretty sure. There are things in this game that would probably make Hideo Kojima blush if he saw them. These great fourth wall breaking moments that, again, I can't talk about because you have to experience them and they have to surprise you, but it's one of those things, again, where I'm like, I can't believe someone actually thought to do this, and they're doing it, and they're really committing to it. I can't believe this is happening in a video game. It just... the developer, I honestly can't wait to see what they do next, because just like all of these amazing ideas came out of one person and with some help with art and music, and the soundtrack is just fantastic. You can look it up on YouTube soundtrack. Now. I definitely recommend it if you need someone to help sell you on the game, because man, what a great soundtrack.
I'll just give a really minor really, really minor example of how they break the fourth wall. There's a point where you're like walking in the tutorial dungeon and they go, do you like cinnamon or butterscotch?
Oh, right.
And I'm like, cinnamon? And they're like, well, you wouldn't hate butterscotch. And I'm like, I like butterscotch too. And then I died. And I reloaded. And I started walking again. And I got the same call. But this time they go, no, wait. Don't tell me. It's cinnamon, isn't it? And I'm like, yes. And I was like, this is one of those things where, like, the enemy, where the NPCs have awareness, even if I, like, reload from a previously saved game. I gotcha.
There's lots of that stuff in the game, including some things. Again, I sound like the biggest idiot because I'm just like, I can't tell you guys why this is cool, but trust me, it is. Like, things that make me think, like, how will this game ever make it to consoles? They're doing certain things in this PC environment that they would need approval to do on a console. So I'm really wondering if Undertale can make it intact to consoles with all the things that it's doing that, like I said, probably can only happen in the PC space. But I can't talk about what they are.
Well, it seems to have picked up a lot of steam recently, getting a lot of very, very positive reviews, and it seems to have a dedicated community. So if history is any guide, then Sony will descend upon them relatively quickly and try to get them on the PlayStation 4.
I really hope so, and it's been a bit slow going. Like I was always going to review the game, but when I saw that no one was, I stepped up my game and was like, I need to play this over the next few days and get it done. And now Giant Bomb has a review, and so does PC Gamer. So a lot of people are finally realizing, like, there are so many retro throwback indie RPGs on Steam. I'm sure a lot of people dismiss this as just another one of those. But then I assume that they found out that it's something much different. And I will say, if you are making a retro, cutesy, indie throwback RPG, you need to do something a lot different now, because Undertale basically just, like, did it all.
Well, that's the same for a lot of indie games in general, right? Where the indie bubble, as you would call it, has burst. And there's just... The market is just so awash in indies that you have to really do something genuinely interesting and great to be able to stand out, or else you're just going to get drowned out by the noise. And Undertale seems to have done that. I mean, despite its pretty, I would say, very simplistic presentation, its humor seems to have wanted a broad audience, and it certainly impressed you. You gave it a 5 out of 5 review over on US Gamer.
I don't know if I've given anything else a 5 out of 5. Maybe Dark Souls 2.
Maybe.
That could be the only other game.
I would have given Shovel Knight a 5 out of 5, but Mike beat me to it.
Yeah, that's a 5 out of 5 too. But yeah, I mean, like, PC Gamer is really harsh. They're really harsh reviewers, and they have a 100-point scale, so they need to be more discerning about what they're giving things because they have such small increments. But they gave it a 91. And if PC Gamer gives something a 91, that means a lot.
100-point scales are stupid.
I agree, but that just makes that 91 more meaningful, I guess, on their scale.
Let's take a completely arbitrary point system and make it as, like, and make it even more arbitrary and, like, make... It's stupid. There's no scientific method to it.
I agree. At the same time, you can't have a conversation about why it's not a 93 or a 92, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I could tell you why it's a 5 out of 5. Nothing is perfect, but this game did everything I wanted it to do, and it surprised me at all times. And I want to immediately go back and play it again. I want to tell everyone about it. I want to talk to people who played it so we can talk about the weird things that we saw. And it's a terrible experience reviewing a game like this because, again, you can't talk about specifics based on what the intent of the game is. And I had the same problem with The Magic Circle, which is another indie game that didn't get a lot of attention but developed a pretty small cult following. It just is, it's reliant on surprise, so you really can't talk about why it's good. The people reading your review just have to trust you. So I hope people trust me. If you don't trust me, look at the Metacritic score.
I trust you, Bob.
Thank you.
You know, it's funny how the RPG genre is so heavily reliant on storytelling. Not a lot of RPGs with good stories. I'm just going to go on a limb there.
That's entirely true. And I don't know, like, normally I would be put off by this much dialogue in an RPG. And this kind of...
So wait. Normally I would be put off by this much dialogue in an RPG. I think that's a great sentence.
Yes, because exactly as you said, most RPGs don't have good dialogue. It's more like, oh, we have to have all these townspeople say something, we have to do this and we have to do that. But that's why I like playing Dark Souls, because it's like everything that's there is there out of necessity. All the text that's there needs to be there. There's no like, there's nothing superficial or superfluous. So everything that's there is meaningful. And the same thing is happening with Undertale. Like, everything is there. Nothing is there just because it needs to fill space. There's always a joke. There's always some new idea. There's always some weird subversion of something you're expecting happening. And that's what I like to see with that kind of content.
Yeah, that's the problem is so many RPGs just default to genre fiction, or they default to the tropiest content imaginable. That goes for BioWare, that goes for, I mean, the Final Fantasy series tries to do some really interesting things, I guess, but they often don't hold together particularly well. Just kind of on down the list. When an RPG does have a really good story, it's often a treat to play.
Yeah.
And I can think of only a handful off the top of my head that I would consider, like, really genuinely great stories. Pillars of Eternity, even though it's, I wouldn't call it anything special. It wasn't painful.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't
like
painful.
I like that Undertale. And is Pillars of Eternity like the Planescape successor?
No, it's kind of the Baldur's Gate.
Okay, I was thinking successor of something else. But
it's by Obsidian.
Okay. The thing I like about Undertale, though, is just, like, it starts off so simple. You fell into a hole, and you're in this new world. Mm. And if you compare that to something like, I've tried to play Final Fantasy Type-0 recently, and the second you start the game, it gives you an entire history of the world up until, like, the point your character was born, basically. And just, like, you need to let me know if any of this is relevant, or you need to make me care about any of this stuff before you start telling me about it. Like, that's what I really dislike about RPGs. Like, we need to build the world first and then put you in it. It's like, no, put me in the world. Let me find out things about it on my own. Like, let me decide if this is interesting or not.
I'm looking at my shelf right now, and Dragon Quest V definitely has a great story.
Oh yeah, and again, it's very simple. Like, you're just born into this world and you're with your dad, and that's it. Just things pick up from there.
I would argue Persona 4 has a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that just the nature of the genre, which was born from, I mean, Dungeons and Dragons was basically stole everything from Lord of the Rings, right? So, and then RPGs were born out of Dungeons and Dragons, and so that kind of genre fiction is baked into its DNA. A lot of people have been comparing it, have been comparing Undertale to Earthbound, and that's really no surprise, right? Because Earthbound is another game that's pretty weird and is cherished for its very strange sense of humor.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely uses a lot of visual cues and audio cues from the Mother series, and I'll say, like, it even goes a bit farther than Mother ever did in terms of just being playful with mechanics. Mother and, you know, the whole Mother trilogy did as best as it could to, you know, be fun and inventive and playful, but at the end of the day, it still had to be an RPG with stats and hit points and magic points and skills and everything like that. Undertale doesn't need to have any of that happening, so it could just kind of screw with the battle system as much as it wants to do. So I think, like, it's even, like, it's like an evolution of Mother into something maybe Mother could have been if it kept going.
That's actually pretty interesting. So in order to kind of deconstruct the RPG genre, it had to basically let go of anything any of the systems or kind of gameplay mechanics that we would traditionally associate with RPGs.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually. I like that idea.
I mean, once I figured that out, like, that was what it was doing, I was like, oh, okay, like, I don't need to grind, I don't need to worry about equipment. I'm just going to, like, take this stuff as it comes and just laugh at the jokes and have fun with all the weird things they're going to show me. And this game is only $10. It's like an 8-hour, just fantastically strange RPG experience. I can't recommend it enough. I sound probably so annoying in my review, just being so effusive and positive, but I couldn't help myself. I just want everyone to play this game. I want to be an advocate for this game. And it's up there in my Game of the Year material already. My Game of the Year category already.
Hey, when you love a game, you love
the
game.
Yeah.
This is unrelated, but I'm playing the Shovel Knight DLC again right now. And good God, it's so much fun. I love that game. I love it. You need to go play it.
I do, yeah. Is that free for everything?
The Plague of Shadows DLC?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Oh, cool. Okay. I gotta go back.
Yeah, you just go download it. It's totally different and hilarious. I suppose my final comment is, yeah, it's kind of disappointing that there aren't a lot of RPGs that aren't, like, strictly humorous, right? I mean, there are lots of RPGs with humor in them, but for a genre that kind of made its bones about on storytelling, or was originally distinguished by the fact that it had a story, it's always disappointed to me that we don't have enough comedic RPGs or RPGs that could be classified as comedies.
It's something that's very hard to do. Like, a lot of the attempts at humor I see in games, and not just RPGs, it's the very kind of try-hardy Borderlands kind of material where they will not let a joke die until they're sure you've gotten it, and everything is, like, super broad, super over the top, lots of, like, joke stacking, like, a character will keep commenting on the joke that they made, just like, okay, I get it. But this game feels very much like kind of like Twitter style humor, where the jokes are in and out, they're very understated. It's very much like the friendlier, softer side of internet humor, the stranger side, I think. That's not as like mean spirited, not as not as broad. It's very like specific internet-y style things. Lots of things in the game are about how certain animals are cute. There's a lot of animal cuteness, which I think is a very internet style kind of attitude.
I think it's just a matter of the fact that it's hard enough to do like a 2-hour movie or a 2-hour show about that it could be constituted as a comedy. But to do a 60 to 80 hour RPG, that's a comedy, maybe not impossible, because I mean, you have plenty of TV shows that are comedies, but certainly very difficult.
That's true, and I think that's why Mother 3 is kind of a tragedy. It starts off as like kind of a light and fluffy adventure, but then soon after the beginning, it turns into a pretty dark game. So I think even the people making Mother games were like, this is hard to, like, making a game funny for this long is hard to do.
Oh, so you don't like Mother 3?
Oh, I love Mother 3, okay. But I mean, I feel like it's not trying to be a comedy after a certain point. It's like a very, very very melancholic, very bittersweet game.
Interesting. Well, moving on, another game that you reviewed is Persona 4 Dancing All Night.
That's right.
You seemed less effusive about that one.
It's just fine. It's a good celebration of these characters. My biggest issue was the amount of resources they spent on this very long, very involved story mode that is kind of just much ado about nothing. It's not terrible, but it doesn't really need to be there, and I'm questioning what more songs could have been on the in the game if they just had cut that out entirely.
How long is the story? Because, okay, I think there's at least 20 to 30 minutes worth of material that goes by without you interacting.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's total visual novel style game. And, yeah, like, I would say there's maybe 8 to 10 hours of just pure story, all voice acted, that are just, you know, separating these songs that you could just otherwise play by selecting them from a menu. And I enjoy these characters, and I enjoy the world of Persona, but I feel like they take this premise way too seriously. Like, they're really trying hard to justify why all of these characters are in an idol band, But you don't really need to do that. Like, the idea, the premise of the game is bizarre and compelling enough that you don't need to tell me why this is happening. But they spend so much time, like, justifying it, and it's just kind of frustrating to watch.
I mean, they kind of did that with Persona 4 Arena, too. Right?
That's what I heard, and I didn't play that game because I don't play a lot of fighting games. But I just feel like the priorities are very strange. Like, Persona Q was just a total wacky... I need to go back to that game, by the way. But it's just a total wacky, crazy, balls-out, like, celebration of these funny Persona characters. Where the premise is very flimsy, but who cares, because the game is lots of fun. But in the case of, like you said, the fighting game in this game, it just, like, they're trying a little too hard to make this, like, to legitimize this dancing game, when all I want to do is watch these characters dance around in silly costumes to good music.
It's almost as if they were mandated. You have to create spin-offs to Persona 4, which is insanely popular in Japan. And Atlus went, ugh. Well, we might as well come up with a way to make it make sense in the universe. And then they went way overboard.
Yeah. I'd like to know if anyone out there actually enjoys this story. Like, I really like Persona 4's story. It was a very, like, serialized TV murder mystery style setup that kept me going, kept me playing to the next day to see what would happen. And this, it's just like, yeah, another character's going to get sucked into this world, and I'll have to save them. They'll have to confront their true selves, etc., etc. It's going to happen again and again and again. And these new characters aren't really that interesting. I like their designs, but just, like, this is not very necessary at all. But you don't have to play the story mode at all. You can skip it entirely. I don't know if you get anything special from beating it. I don't remember. But the real meat of the game is the dancing stuff, the rhythm sections, and those are fun. Nothing too complex. It's basically the most basic interpretation of that kind of an idea, but the music is so great, the remixes are fun, and the dance numbers are just amazingly choreographed. It's just like you're basically watching a bunch of Persona 4 music videos while you're, you know, interacting with the music.
Great soundtrack is the secret weapon of a great RPG.
Yeah, you listen to those songs a lot. But I have to wonder if Atlus is now, like, can they possibly use these, trot these characters out again, even after Persona 5? I'm just wondering if this is the end of the Persona 4 cast.
I mean, they're so popular that, and the story and the world is big enough that they probably could bring out these characters again, but I would rather that they brought them out in, maybe more of a crossover context. Like, if they made a true, like, sequel, say with Persona 6, they bring out the entire cast from Persona 3, 4, and 5, and have them team up. I mean, that could be interesting. They kind of do that in Persona Q, but that was a spin-off. It's a little different. I'm talking about, like, something that is genuinely advancing whatever the heck is going on. I think the problem is, the different elements don't always mesh together super well, because, I mean, you see that in Persona Q when the characters from 3 and 4 unite. They're like, oh, well, I use a gun to draw my true self. And also, have you heard of the Dark Hour? And they're like, dark what? I mean, so you'd have a lot of different threads to unite. Persona 5 looks even more different, so...
Yeah, I wonder if after literally 8 years, Atlus is kind of anxious about introducing new characters to their fans, because, like I said, we've lived with these characters for 8 years, and even longer with the Persona 3 cast, so... That's weird to think that we'll have a new group of Persona kids to play with.
The funny thing is that the Persona 4 characters are really similar to the Persona 3 characters.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's an analog to all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty closely.
I was playing Persona Q when I was traveling, actually. And while I was playing it, I was just struck by how similar the characters are, like, across the board. I think the only character who doesn't have an analog, maybe, is Yukari, the... No... yeah, I don't think she really has a direct analog, unless you want to count Mitsuru. Mitsuru is the very mature student council president.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't think she does, but I mean, Junpei and Yosuke are basically the same goofball character.
And Chie and What's-Her-Face. And kind of on down the line, you definitely see a ton of similarities going on there. But I mean, that might have been a product of the fact that Persona 4 came out really soon after Persona 3, relatively speaking. Certainly compared to the gap between Persona 4 and 5.
It was only 2 years, or maybe three. But yeah, it's almost been a decade since the last Persona game. I mean, it's crazy to think that. I mean, Atlus only really made internally one HD game so far, and that was 4 years ago, and that was Catherine.
Yeah, I think it was a couple episodes ago we were talking about Persona 5 being delayed, which was pretty unfortunate, but maybe inevitable.
Literally a year is going to pass before we get to play that game.
How far did you get in Persona Q?
I didn't get much past the first dungeon because I had a ton of other stuff to play that season, so...
Yeah, I finally just made it to the second labyrinth.
But I like what I played a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I love Etrian Odyssey and... Just like playing that with a more familiar cast and a better aesthetic, I think is really the big draw for me. So I really need to go back to it. But it's like one of maybe 20 RPGs I've started and just left behind, you know, and intending to come back to it.
I started playing Persona Q last year in like December, and I was really enjoying it, and I meant to keep going. But then I got to Amsterdam, and my 3DS died. And I couldn't figure out how to charge it for the longest time. And I discovered that I had to buy a European charger to be able to get power into it. But as a result, I kind of lost the thread and got involved with a different game. But now it's become this thing where, like, whenever I travel, I always seem to end up picking up Persona Q again. But I finally managed to get the Persona 3 characters into my party.
Oh, cool.
Did you get the Persona 3 characters?
You know what? I don't remember. It's been a long time since I picked it up, but I've been thinking about it. Just like, I got to go back to it.
They really expand the mechanics quite a bit once the Persona 3 characters show up. And I just love all of the little individual touches. Like when you're in the menu screen, when the Persona 3 characters show up, you see them doing random thing, like doing... interacting in random ways with the Persona 4 cast that like is totally like in character for them. It's actually really great. Just great game. Pretty underrated so far. I mean, I gotta play more of it, but I really wish I had more time to play it, but that is the lot of a game journalist, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that I was not particularly keen on Dancing All Night's story from what I played of it because it was so long. Did not hate Persona 4 Arena's story. And that's because I think it was just briefer. And I think that at the time, it was more novel to have a new Persona 4 story. And that was the first instance in which the two groups of characters came together. So I was like, oh, cool. Like, what's going to happen next? And then, like, it gets to the end of the story. Like, you finish a particular character and it's like, now play a different character to find out what else is going on, right? And then the different stories come together in interesting ways. So, I don't necessarily think that it's essential, but it's certainly fun to play if you're a Persona fan. So maybe in that regard, Persona 4 Arena and Persona Q both work better than Persona 4 Dancing All Night. Now, you did write an article about Dragon Quest Builders, which...
I did.
Since, as long as we're talking about Tokyo Game Show, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think Jeremy would be able to weigh in on this better, because I think he actually played it, but...
But Jeremy's not here.
That's true. But I will tell you that I kind of dismissed this game as just like, oh, good job, Dragon Quest. You realize what kids like now. But then I watched the trailer, and this is all based on the trailer and some things I read, but just like, oh, okay. Like, I tinker with Minecraft. I've been playing around with it since like the alpha or whatever, but it's just like... There's too much to do, and like, even though crafting, there's some assistance with crafting, it's just like, I gotta start from scratch, and I don't feel like looking up mods, but with Dragon Quest, it's just like, here's a guided version of the Minecraft experience with Dragon Quest stuff in it, and if that's what it needs to take me to get into the Minecrafty kind of play, I will definitely give it a shot. I mean, that's basically why it looks interesting to me, like, okay, this is a means for me to enter the world of Minecraft, as it, I assume it will be for a lot of old people who understand Dragon Quest but don't quite, you know, have a thing for Minecraft yet.
Not me. My kind of game.
I get it. It just I need the endless free time of a child to do anything meaningful in the world of Minecraft.
I need somebody to get off my lawn right now. And that someone is Minecraft. Just in the sense that, you know, I think you're right. And isn't it a large part of Minecraft's appeal and like the mods and the crazy things that you can do?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's just like a kit to build endless anything. So I think I even said in the article, like, I wish Minecraft had been out when I was a kid. I dreamed of a thing like that, like infinite Legos in my life.
Me too.
Now our generations of children have this thing, and I'm so jealous of them because every child is talking about Minecraft everywhere I go.
Do you think they're going to put actual RPG elements into this thing?
I really Probably think not. They do. Jeremy said there was like a dungeon where he fought enemies and things like that. So all of the Dragon Quest hooks should be there. And from what I heard, it's pretty nice looking. I assumed it was just a portable game, but it's actually for PS4 as well.
No. Oh. Did you hear the hook of Dragon Quest Builders?
Yeah, I guess it's like the bad ending of Dragon Quest 1. What happens after that?
I like that, actually.
It's very cool. I mean, like, I like that they found a space, like, a space to put that game.
The bad ending being, or it's like, you get a choice at the end of Dragon Quest, either challenge the final boss to a fight, or team up with him and rule half of a left guard while he destroys the other half. And Dragon Quest Builders goes with the second option.
Yeah.
And you're rebuilding it, so... I mean, cute take on it, or it's a good conceit for getting people into this experience, but really, we all know that it's kind of a cynical attempt to cash in on Minecraft, which is very popular over in Japan.
It is, but I will say,
with a known property.
Dragon Quest is kind of like, was born as a plagiarized item, I guess. Like, it does its own thing, but it was really like one guy in Japan saying, okay, how do I make a version of Wizardry and Ultima for, you know, the Japanese audience? So Dragon Quest never started as a very original thing to begin with, so it's hard to be too mean about it trying to do Minecraft now when it was just, it's always been latching on to whatever's popular since the very beginning.
Continuing on with kind of a Tokyo Game Show recap, I guess you could call it, which... Apologies that we didn't get it to this point already, but unfortunately, the people who could come on the show and talk about TGS with any real authority were not really present on the show over the past couple weeks. But and Jeremy is unfortunately not available. But correct me if I'm wrong, but they announced some Bloodborne DLC, right?
They did. I believe it's called The Old Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's meant to explore the, Ludwig, one of the characters in the game, who you never see, but he was the church's first hunter. This will all make sense to you if you played Bloodborne. And he actually has one of the best weapons in the game, which I love, which is Ludwig's Holy Blade. But apparently it's sort of like a prequel.
I know what that thing is.
And you're going to find out what happened to Ludwig and... Yeah, I mean, like, as with anything Bloodborne, they never say anything about what you're going to get. But I'm just excited for more Bloodborne because it's going to be a very substantial piece of DLC. I think it's pretty highly priced, too.
Ooh.
I think it's a $20 DLC thing, but from what I hear, it's going to be very substantial. And I've been looking for a reason to play more Bloodborne. I've already gone through it twice. And From can do no wrong at this point for me, so I'm going to trust them because
they can for me.
What's
called Armored Core?
Oh, I don't count that.
It's just not From anymore at this point. Right. It's like two different studios.
I count the from 2009 onwards, but like the Dark Souls 2 DLC was fantastic in that it was a developer totally addressing criticism and trying to do better. And they are very much, that is their philosophy with this kind of DLC. Like, what did we screw up and fix it? How can we make it better? And I think that they're going to do that with the Bloodborne DLC. Give people the levels that they didn't see in the first game, or sorry, in the main game. Do things they wanted to do, but maybe didn't have time to do. Give new weapons and armor to give more variety to character builds, things like that. So I honestly think this is going to be great, even if Bloodborne left you, a little disappointed.
Yeah, Bloodborne has been pretty highly praised by most people, but if I hear one fairly common criticism. It's that there are people who think that it just wasn't deep enough. Do you agree with that?
I would say they're right about that completely. There are only a few ways to build a character, and there are certain builds that are possible, but they're not very practical, like the Blood Tinge and the Arcane builds. For the most part, you want to play with a strong, you know, strength and skill-based character and play it kind of like a Devil May Cry or Bayonetta-style game. So if you're interested in trying, you know, different builds and stuff, I can definitely see how Bloodborne... it would be disappointing, but like the moment-to-moment action in that game is what really gets me playing it. Like, I love the enemy encounters, and I love the bosses, so I don't actually mind the playing it through, you know, with the one style of gameplay, with the one style of character, rather.
Other than, I suppose, maybe more variety of, a greater variety of character builds, and... I guess just more Bloodborne. Is there anything else you want out of this DLC?
Definitely, I want a lot of different weapons and armor, because there's not a huge variety in the game as it stands. And that's basically because weapons have to do a lot more than be just this thing you swing. They have to transform and change. So they have to put a lot more work into designing a weapon. But I just want to see different armor, because you don't have a huge amount of variety. And I want to do fashion souls, which is what we call it in the Dark Souls community, where you just completely neglect any sort of practical concerns and just put on the things that look best.
I mean, I do that in my RPGs anyway.
I mean, I guess it's
didn't
not
I tell you that RPGs for me are just dress
yeah.
up.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's why I love Final Fantasy 14 and Dragon Quest 9. Just like, I love playing dress up with little fantasy people. So who cares about numbers?
I mean, I go if an item is really good stats wise but does not look good, I will go out of my way and use the crappier piece of gear just because it looks better.
I actually just did that in Final Fantasy 14 because I play a female character, and the stronger like armor for my lap area, I guess you'd call it, was basically just like a pair of leather bikini bottoms, and I was like, I'm not wearing those. My ass will be hanging out.
And it's getting all saggy.
Yeah, well, my character works out.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But I didn't want to be like harassed by male players, or actually stare at a character's butt cheeks for like as long as it took me to level out of that gear.
That was one thing that I liked about Diablo 3 was that I would go out of my way to spend quite a lot of money just dyeing my armor and changing it up so that I could have all of the stats benefits, but that it would look the way that I wanted it to, because gosh darn it, that was really important to me. It's just I do think that there is kind of a critical element in RPGs where you are putting your own stamp on your character by being able to make them look the way that you want and distinguish them from other characters. So it's not surprising to me that there's a quote-unquote fashion souls community out
oh, yeah.
there. For sure. Well, other than that, TGS this year, apparently not that great. There was a Kingdom Hearts, another Kingdom Hearts remake is coming out.
Yeah.
You really want to play Dream Drop Distance.
All over again in HD. God, I've already registered my disgust about this, but I feel like Kingdom Hearts needs a reboot, and they need to find another developer, maybe another creative team at Square to figure it out, because it just... Nothing has changed in the past 13 years.
Hey. They've layered on a lot of superfluous systems.
Yes.
That don't actually change the nature of the hack and slash.
I mean, they never bothered to take anything out, so with every game, it's just like, wow, there's just like so much to do and none of it really matters. But I want to like this series. It's just, I have no faith in it because they just keep treading water and I don't know when they're going to stop.
Yeah, the problem with this compilation is that I think it focuses on the portable iterations. Does this have the PSP one on it?
That was actually on 2.5 HD. I think there's only one game on this, if I'm not completely... Yeah, I think there's only one game and some like playable prologue stuff. For whatever Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be. So I think the only thing that's on this release that previously existed was Dream Drop Distance.
That was one that I did not have to play, but I had to play both 358 over 2 days and was it Birth by Sleep?
Yeah.
I had to play both of those for review back when I was still freelancing for various outlets because most outlets didn't particularly want it so they would farm it out to freelancers and inevitably I would have like three outlets coming and saying, Kat, could you review this? And because I was poor and I needed to eat, I was like, sure, fine, whatever, I'll review it. I had to do the guide for 358
over 2 days. I'm sure millions of people saw that, right?
In Japanese.
Oh, God.
I had to play it in Japanese so that I could do the guide, and I discovered the true joy of... God, I remember it was lots of platforming puzzles. Mm. I think there were boxes involved.
Was that the DS one?
Yeah, that was the DS one.
Pretty gross looking, too.
It was a bad game. It was not a good game. Birth Before Sleep was a little better, but it had so much repetitive content and characters who, frankly, I didn't really care for. I think the common criticism of Kingdom Hearts, not to beat a dead horse, but they really did get away from the Disney stuff too much.
Yeah, like, I feel like that was, again, I've said this before, but I think that was them safeguarding themselves. Like, if we lose the Disney license, we'll still have all these characters that can continue the story. But
yeah,
that hasn't happened, and they're not doing a lot with what they've created so far. I want to see such a weird and interesting idea I originally loved to go places, but they're just kind of happy to be like, oh, here's a Little Mermaid world again, have fun.
I look forward to Star Wars randomly and the Marvel Heroes people randomly showing up in Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, I'm sure. And if a Star Wars level gets you excited about Kingdom Hearts, please like curb your enthusiasm because it'll still be Kingdom Hearts. I imagine they'll have some like super gimmicky thing like how Pirates of the Caribbean was in Kingdom Hearts 2. I'm sure there'll be something like that in Kingdom Hearts 3. And people will be like, oh, I'm going to get it now. Now I care. But you should just, you know, just stay skeptical about Kingdom Hearts. That's all I'm saying.
Wear your cynicism like armor over your heart.
They're only trying to pander to you for the most part if they're doing things like that.
I'll say this. I'm reserving judgment on Kingdom Hearts 3. And I'm reserving judgment on Kingdom Hearts 3 because, at least in the trailers, it looked better. It looked fairly similar to what's come before, but I mean, it certainly looked a lot better graphically, and it looked kind of fun, so I don't know. I don't have high expectations for it, but I'm going to at least give it a shot.
I would like it to exist so we can stop talking about it.
I mean, yeah, I suppose so.
And so Tetsuya Nomura can justify his employment at Square Enix. Whatever he's doing, we need to know. We need to understand why he's being paid.
I suppose the last little tidbit that kind of caught my eye over at TGS was Jeremy's bit about three promising RPGs that he saw over the show, and I hadn't realized that Vanillaware is back at it again with a game called 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, which, yes, it sounds like Pacific Rim, and it has a giant robot. But it's okay because Vanillaware's games always have killer art.
They do. Sometimes it's questionable designs.
Sure.
I didn't play Dragon's Crown? I didn't play Dragon's Crown because I thought the artist's interpretation of the female body was kind of grotesque and not fun to look at.
You didn't play it?
I didn't play it, no.
I really liked it.
I that was just an immediate turnoff for me, and I know he's a talented guy, and I know he can do great stuff, but just like the weird Funhouse Mirror Frank Frazetta style he was going for was just a little too hard to look at for me. So I was happy to see him be a little more subdued in what I've seen with the characters in this game so far.
My solution was in Dragon's Crown was to be the elf, and the elf was not like weird looking at all. Like, she was just basic elf wearing a hood, long hair with a bow. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Sure, why not? And then, for the most part, like... And then I found myself playing a decidedly above average RPG brawler, and I had a great time with it. So, yeah, it's a shame that it's been kind of overlooked, because it really is a really enjoyable beat-em-up, which I don't say very often, because beat-em-ups have kind of, I feel, had their time in the sun. That's not a controversial thing to say at all, but as for 13 Sentinels, not a lot known about this one, but I gotta say that I agree with Jeremy when he says that you don't often see Kamitani kind of going into the more futuristic look. Like, usually he sticks to, like, Norse mythology or kind of a fantasy aesthetic. So I like this change on his part, and I especially love that he's doing mechs.
Yeah, the art looks really cool. I'm interested in knowing what this game will be. I still haven't really liked many Vanillaware games. I've enjoyed them, but they've always been a little too repetitive for me. So hopefully there's some interesting gameplay stuff in this one.
Play Dragon's Crown. Maybe it'll change your mind. You can get on PS4.
Mayhaps.
I'm sure it's probably cheap right now.
I'll wait for a sale.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. And the new Odin Sphere is coming out.
That's right. That's a very pretty game that I played the first world or whatever, and I was like, okay, I get it, and that was done. So I hope this new version will make things a little better.
Yeah, I wrote a summary of, like, kind of everything that's going on with Odin Sphere, and sounds like they're changing almost everything. And I seem to recall, maybe I'm imagining this, but I seem to recall Jeremy writing about it at some point and also expressing his optimism for it, because I seem to he was lukewarm on the original Odin Sphere, or he liked it, but it kind of, like, wore thin for him. I'm not sure which, but
I think he called it, like, this is going to be a good game made great.
Yes, that sounds
the remake. I think he wrote that for us. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, that's super positive, right?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I just remember, like, oh, this is a very pretty game. Lots of horrible slowdown, and I fight a boss, and then the second chapter starts, and I'm fighting the same boss but with a different character, and I was like, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, Odin Sphere had real problems with slowdown and also a lot of repetitive content. And then, but this remake will presumably not have slowdown problems, I hope.
I would really hope after two generations.
And also, obviously, the graphics are being substantially improved. And it sounds like he's kind of taken a page from Dragon's Crown, and having branching paths, which is pretty cool, because in Dragon's Crown, I mean, he had a certain number of levels, but what would happen is you would go in and then you would choose, like, which way you want to go. And the direction you choose is basically an entirely different level, like completely different enemies, different objective, and a totally different final boss. So in essence, you have double the number of levels. So it sounds like he's doing that with Odin Sphere, which should vary things up quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a better game this time.
That's coming within, I suppose, next year for the most part, except for maybe the Bloodborne DLC. Is that coming out this year?
I think that's November.
Oh, that's exciting. We're going to be busy, won't we? Is there any RPGs that you're looking forward to in the rest of the year after, now that you're done with Undertale?
Boy. Oh, boy. I'm trying to think. I'm gonna move on to Final Fantasy XIV's expansion, and as soon as I beat the main game, which should happen sometime this year. That's a fairly new RPG.
I suppose so, yeah. I think the expansion came out in E3.
Like September. I think it was like August or September, but
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I've been getting really into Final Fantasy XIV, and I recommend that you check it out if you're skeptical.
Yeah, now that Persona 5's not coming out, it's a little more of a question of what else is coming out, though. I am looking forward to Cosmic Star Heroine. You're familiar with that one, right?
I'm not.
That's the one done by Robert Boyd, who also did, like, Breath of Death 7 and Cthulhu Saves the World in the Penny Arcade games.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
That looks kind of like Chrono Trigger.
That's right. Yeah. That was off my radar, but you just reminded me of it, actually.
It's totally on my radar, along with Fallout 4, which I am going to be playing for sure.
Oh, right. God, I forgot about Fallout 4. Okay. Yeah. That's something
I want
to play.
Oh, you do want to play Fallout 4.
God, I need to get. Oh, for sure. I need to beat all these games before it comes out, though. I need to play more Metal Gear Solid 5 and get to the end of that gargantuan beast.
Yeah, well, I'm currently tied up with NBA 2K, so... which is... it's a basketball RPG. With directed by Spike Lee, which we were talking a bit about how RPGs have a thing for tropes. NBA 2K is basically like a really tropey sports movie.
I see.
You know, one of those sports movies where it's like, he thought he had it all, but then he discovered the darker side of the game.
The price of fame, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's... it hits all the beats that you kind of expect in that frame, in that context. But yeah, enough about NBA 2K. In any case, Bob, thanks for dropping by.
No problem. We're wrapping up just as Louis's getting cranky.
Oh, your bird's getting
That's my
cranky.
Bird, not my son, by the way.
Where can we find you?
Please check out me. I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo, and I also do the Classic Gaming Podcast Retronauts. We just did a Dragon Quest episode that Kat unfortunately could not be on, but I still think we did a bang-up job. Even though there was something missing.
It's because I hate JRPGs.
It's because you refused to cancel your vacation to be on Retronauts. I found that extremely rude.
Yeah, it's because I hate JRPGs.
I've read that.
Yeah, I heard it from somewhere. I don't know where.
Because you have to like them all. It's all or nothing.
I know. I actually do like JRPGs. And I'm really sad that I couldn't make it to the Dragon Quest episode. But I'm told that there's... spoiler, there's a PSP episode coming up, and I will definitely be on that one.
It could happen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. As usual, you can find us over at US Gamer. Check out our Twitch channel and YouTube channel and Facebook and Twitter and all that. That's US Gamer Net. Follow me over on Twitter at @_catbot. We're heading into the teeth of the review season, so you're going to have a lot of content over on US Gamer. I got a cover story that's going to be going up on Monday talking about the Japanese expat game development community. So if you are really into that sort of thing, and I think that there's quite a nice little crossover, like the Venn diagram is very favorable in this instance, then you should go check it out. But otherwise, Bob, thanks for dropping by.
No problem. Had a lot of fun.
And go play Undertale. It sounds like a super rad game, and I've certainly been enjoying it. But otherwise, happy adventuring. We'll be right back.